Hey everybody, welcome to Watchmen with Jay, Jack, and Matt. My name is Jay.
I'm Matt.
And I'm the brick joke wasn't funny.
And welcome to the show. Jack, I don't think it was intended to be funny, but...
When someone says it's a joke, it should be funny.
That's the joke of kind of the comedian, if you read the comic or watched the movie. Which you did.
Okay.
It's kind of like a joke that's ironic or not. It's kind of sad than rather.
Yeah, funny. I get it, but I didn't really have anything else from the show to say.
Are you kidding me? There are really great quotes from this episode.
What, you're not going to cuss again? Not going to swear?
but I agree with Matt's sentiment here in dropping the F-bomb that we had to just edit out. But yeah, there's so many. I figured with the swinging blue member joke that was in there. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in this episode. So yeah, I don't know what your deal is on this one, Jack. Are you cranky tonight?
No, I'm not cranky. I'm not effing cranky like someone is.
I'm not cranky. I just think that
you're coming across as cranky.
Okay, well, wow. episode three. This episode, and again, she was killed by space junk. So freaking good. I wish I could use some expletives because I kind of left this episode just really pumped. I mean, I've been enjoying it as it is, and they've been introducing, you know, these new characters, especially with Sister Knight, Angela Abar, and what's going on in Tulsa. And it's a really compelling story, plus the little tastes and hints of Ozymandias. But with the kind of introduction here of, is it Julie Blake, right?
Lori Blake,
the Silk Spectre, or formerly Silk Spectre 2. Man, what a freaking good episode.
Yeah, I felt like this one was really firing on all cylinders. And for those that might have felt like the second episode dragged, or maybe they didn't get as hooked in on the first two episodes, I felt like it, you know, we have all the moving parts and they're coming together in a lot of fun ways. So I've enjoyed this show so far, but yes, this one, I think it was the first one where I was like, this was excellent. So, and I think that, you know, Lori's character, seeing her and how she's been affected post Watchmen mm-hmm. was just so good.
Yeah.
I mean, in
she's
in
a little uptight.
She what?
She's a little uptight.
You would be too if you found out that your mom was raped by the comedian.
I guess that's true.
But yet she takes on the last name of the comedian, which in the comic, I don't believe that she took on the last name of Blake. That was just the revelation that she came to. So we're kind of seeing how she's dealing with this heritage that's, you know, I mean, she's had 30 some years to process the fact that she is part comedian. And, as you know, Jack pointed out, like she has a dark sense of humor.
Yep. And that's where, just her character, where it's at now, basically the vigilante killer pretty much was shooting the guy and how much, you know, with the adoption of the last name, but also just the kind of cynicism that the comedian kind of brought to the original Watchmen comic, she's bringing here and is really the only one of the original kind of Watchmen, seemingly the original Watchmen characters that's still at play or in play since, you know, Dr. Manhattan's on Mars. Ozymandias is wherever the hell he is.
You think he's trying to escape?
Yes, clearly.
Okay.
Whatever imprisonment he has, and we can dig into that more as we get into this episode. And then it also, I guess, it was kind of heavily hinted that Night Owl is in prison or something for something he did, and that's what Senator Keene's going to possibly get him out or pardon him for. Whenever he becomes, or if he becomes president. So, yeah, just a really, like, I was perfectly fine if the original Watchmen storyline was just kind of there on the periphery, not really a major influence to the story. I was perfectly fine with that because I think the story is really compelling without that. But adding this to it, I think just takes it to a whole nother level that I think, you know, much like Walkabout episode 4 of Lost was that kind of turning point where, yes, it was a good show, but like that point, I was like, yes, this episode was that for me. And I don't know if it maybe felt the same for you, Matt. It seems like possibly it was similar in vain.
No, I think the call out to Walkabout is great because that, I think that's on par if we're comparing, you know, if we're making the Lost comparison here, because it not only did it, I felt, expand a character, it brought in a new character, but expanded this universe that's been created. So far we've just been in Tulsa, and now we start to understand and we're able to put together some of these other pieces that have been laid out and explain exactly what the DOPA thing is, which is funny. I mean, at every moment we get with Lori Blake in this episode, she is there poking holes and making fun of the things that are there. And I don't know. You gotta love the moxie that her character has. The DOPA was mentioned, the Defensive Police Act. We get a little bit behind why Green is making such a scene on the political arena, and how he actually fits into you know why Tulsa is unique, because you know their police had this event that occurred, and then they developed this identity secrecy, you know, and using masks to fight masks
like vigilantes but legal vigilantes,
right,
where it's interesting to see that as we've pulled back outside of Tulsa, the other type of vigilante is still around, even though if Lori Blake has her way, you know, she'll eventually lock them all up, but
just shoot them in cold blood,
right? And that to me is where that right off the bat we're seeing, you know, originally she took on her mother's kind of moniker of Silk Spectre, but now it seems very clearly she seems to be, you know, in the camp of, you know, the comedian too, in a lot of ways, which I find fascinating just because the comedian's such a, you know, complex, or maybe not complex, but a not somebody you generally root for type of character, a very flawed character. But it's interesting to see her adopt that cynicism after 30 years of the events of Watchmen and the giant squid being dropped on New York City, killing 3 million people. But either way, excited to talk about this episode with you gentlemen. We also have some listener feedback to get into. But before we get into any of that, I want to thank the people that make this show possible, our patrons over at patreon.com/JNJack. All of the podcasts on the Jay and Jack Network are listener supported, and this one is no different. If you enjoy this show and all of the other ones, consider contributing whether $1 or more a month to help make these shows possible. That's patreon.com/JayandJack, or go to jayandjack.com and click on the Become a Patron link today. All right, gentlemen. We are following deep into the tracks here, where the first two episodes were really focusing on Angela's character, and this one is through the perspective of Lori Blake. So Lori Blake, I think we've already talked about a few things here, but what other things do you want to dig in with this character? She's still obviously in love with Dr. Manhattan in a way, or connected to him, and still connected to Night Owl, because she has, I guess, his pet owl.
Who? Name who?
Did Night Owl have a pet owl? I'm trying to remember if he did or not.
I don't know. I mean, I remember, you know, he had I thought it was the ship that was named Archimedes, but I don't remember him having a pet owl.
Yeah, I don't think he did, but...
Oh. Well, and if we're wrong on that, feel free
I'm sure
to
people
write
will.
In and tell us that we forgot something in issue.
Well, I mean, I have the collected works here, and I'm not seeing an owl. But again, it might have been there for a brief moment.
to at least take this episode from the top, and the moment that we've mentioned there, we see this bank robbery happening, and I love that this was a whole setup. And it also kind of references a little bit back to the Minutemen. The Minutemen had a character called Dollar Bill, who was actually kind of a corporate shill, so to speak. Like, he worked for the bank, and he was kind of just there as kind of like a figurehead almost. Like, hey, our banks are protected by this, you know, masked hero. But then the bank robbery is foiled by what we find out to be Mr. Shadow, who is a kind of a Batman knockoff, I guess. Right.
Looked like Batman to me.
Well, they even had the reference of the Revenger? One less rich guy off the street or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Rich, keeping rich guys off the street. I liked that. So, I liked this whole, I mean, this was a great way to start off the episode.
Did you see that twist coming, that it wasn't really a bank robbery?
Kind of. I knew something else just because, you know, we saw the preview and she said, you know, FBI. So, yes, but it was still interesting just because the whole episode is kind of juxtaposed with her in the Dr. Manhattan phone booth, which I found interesting, and her kind of going through this joke throughout the entire episode. I just thought it was kind of just a really compelling intro to the character. But it didn't have me sold on that immediately. And I'm assuming same for you, Jack.
I want that cell service, because if you can send a message to Mars in 40 seconds, I want that.
It's improved technology. I mean, I'm sure Dr. Manhattan invented it or something.
Because that's outstanding. I mean, I have drop-offs every now and then, so it'd just be nice to be able to have something that quick. I just thought it was amazing.
Dr. Manhattan can connect beyond the realm that normal people can, or even satellites, so maybe that's the speed up there.
Okay.
But now what do you think the purpose of the blue box is? To just make humanity feel good? Like it's like a little like security blanket? Or is this to also allow Dr. Manhattan to try to keep some of his humanity?
Maybe not to forget us, Dr. Manhattan. Don't forget us.
Well, I think, yeah, it's a bit of all of those things because, you know, he is a very powerful god, essentially. He was the nuclear deterrent for the United States for a long time into the Vietnam War in this universe. But the fact that he was becoming so disassociated with humanity was incredibly concerning, I think, for humanity, because you don't want this being that could care less whether you were alive or dead to possibly, you know, take judgment on humanity in a negative light. But I wonder who made that, though, if it actually Dr. Manhattan wanted to do, because I feel like just from his character arc in the Watchmen comic book series that he could care less if those things were made. So I wonder if it's just a government thing to, again, make people feel safe, even though it's just kind of snake oil.
I mean, if it is snake oil, I mean, maybe the messages don't even reach him.
Maybe it's all fake.
You're telling me that you can't get a message to Mars in 40 seconds.
Possibly,
just ruined my night.
Possibly, but also it'd be interesting to see, because he did hear, you know, Lori in this conversation. He threw that car back.
Well, I mean, if he is Dr. Manhattan and he's that super omniscient, I mean, maybe he just watches Lori and he knows what's up with her.
Yeah.
And, you know, he could care less about all of the other millions of people that call into the blue box and try to get their souls saved.
Or is it just a money scam?
Yeah. I mean,
if that's where it's kind of like, is it snake oil or not? Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe this is something that we'll still even get an answer for, or maybe never. So
yeah, I don't know if we even need it, to be honest. I think it just kind of is there. I wouldn't put putting a lot of stock into it.
I mean, I've been amazed at some of the answers that we do get pretty quickly. I mean, at some point, I mean, they mentioned her as Agent Blake, and I was like, wait, is that the comedians, like, related to the comedian? And then they mentioned Lori, and I'm like, oh, you know. So, and then of course they
F you, Lori.
Different Lori, different show. Okay.
Sorry.
I don't know. I was glad that it wasn't like a secret where it was like, oh, or we've got to wait this out before.
Well, they
kind of
hit us over the head with it, right? And then much like the brick at the end of the joke. But you know, with the was that Warhol painting that she
yes.
has in her thing there, which I find interesting. That she would keep that there because she does have this disdain for Adrian Veidt and vigilantes in general. So I do find that fascinating that she has that piece of art up there.
Well, it's interesting that the piece of art also showcases the four people that she references in her joke.
Yes.
I mean, there's other heroes. I mean, it doesn't have the comedian in there. It doesn't have... trying to think of some of the other
Rorschach.
It doesn't. Yeah.
Well, I think it's from that second photograph. I think it was, I think those are the ones not there. Rorschach and the comedian.
Right. So, you know, it just, I like the fact that when we do get to her apartment though, we do kind of learn more about that. And, yeah, we got the owl. I'm trying to think of like what else happens in that scene, but I might be skipping over something.
She fed it a mouse.
That's true. Yeah. I was at one point, I was like, okay, what is she feeding a mouse to? So,
I thought it was going to be a snake.
Right. Cause snakes are cool.
Yeah, I guess. But,
apparently the technology for voice activation is there, but they don't have iPods or iPhones, you know, like there's no Apple Music where she could just say, play Devo. It's actually a CD, which I thought was kind of interesting. You know, it's like this old technology mixed with,
well, she's old school.
She is old school. Yeah, sure. Anyway, the jokes that are kind of happening, like she tells the one joke in the blue booth. Blue booth? Is that what it's called? Blue? It sounds like a weird thing to say.
Blue booth.
It's like the Bluths, you know? Yeah,
exactly.
So, yeah, you go blue yourself in one of the blue booths. So she messes up the bricklayer joke, which is obviously, like, we find out is a setup at the very end. But she tells this other joke, though, about the three heroes, which I thought was great, you know, like just that reveal, like throughout the episode, I liked how they kind of spread that out.
Yeah, exactly. And they kind of all tied in with, yeah. Cause you know, right after, kind of finding out that if she does this for Senator Keene, he'll let out, the owl, which is in reference to Night Owl. So that's, you know, when she's talking about it, she talks about, that person, and then once it goes to Ozymandias, she's talking about that, and then talking about Dr. Manhattan. So I would assume, because those are all in the joke, we haven't had Night Owl yet, but that we will be getting him at some point, right? Or could he just maybe be at the very end is released or something? I don't know how they're going to set up season two, or if there even is going to be a season two, but I'd be curious to see for sure.
Yeah, I'm just as curious too about that. Like, how are they getting owl technology too? I mean, like Angela's goggles, you know, or even the ship, you know, like, or did they just steal? Did they just confiscate all that stuff and then just, you know, they're like, well, we've got scientists, we can figure this out.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe he worked with them at some point and then kind of went the other way at some point.
Yeah, we reduce your sentence, you know, give us your deets.
Mm-hmm.
The scene where she goes into the FBI, kind of, what is it, conference room there, you know, and we see, I'm not sure who that agent is talking, but, you know, he's kind of flipping through a lot of the different things and kind of basically bringing the audience up to speed with things that we already know, making connections with, you know, Custer's Last Stand and the 7th Cavalry and the fact that they're just KKK with different masks. But at one point, though, we do Agent get Petey. To see an excerpt of Rorschach's journal, mm-hmm. which is the October 13th excerpt, which is basically the excerpt that kind of begins the entire Watchmen storyline. Yeah. So that was kind of an interesting, like, that's the one that it starts with. So,
and it culminates on November 2nd, right? Or 2nd or 3rd? With the giant squid monster.
Right.
I think it was November 2nd.
Yeah, I believe you're right.
I think Danny made a post about it. He thought it was
important, but the FBI guy didn't think, right?
But I think it is, and that's where I do find it fascinating. November 2nd. So kind of a short time frame once Rorschach figured everything out. But yes, they are very much seemingly like, you know, just a different version of the KKK. But the fact that, you know, it's a whatever Rorschach journal was became the manifesto for these people. And I do think there is more there that might come to play as time goes on. Maybe. Or it's just going to be a little aside thing. What do you guys think?
I don't know. I mean, that Rorschach journal cover was kind of cool because it had the guns and the eyes, or at least that's what I saw.
Well, they brought it up for a reason, so.
Yeah. I could see them referencing Rorschach's journal yet again. I mean, it's almost kind of like a show Bible at this point, so. Yeah. Or part of its canon. No, that's not the show's Bible. Anyway, I like that Lori basically tells them like that she doesn't want everybody else to go. Like, this is like she's just taking over the job here, but she picks Petey as her. And like,
Petey was great.
Yes, and I love that he brought his own little mask.
Yeah,
that mask when he uses later.
It's Tulsa. Yeah, it's not Rome.
But I love how she, yeah, Rome.
What's, oh yeah, I love how he or she basically goes solo. She quickly kind of is one, I guess, doesn't care, but also kind of horrified about how the Tulsa police conduct themselves. And I think even just seeing their warehouse and where they're rounding up the 7th Cavalry, she does seem disturbed by it a little bit. But also just kind of doesn't play the game, and definitely kind of antagonizes Looking Glass in their with each other.
His racist room?
Yes.
Racist detector.
Detector room, that's right, yes, room. Yes.
And one of my favorite lines that she says when she's picking her teeth, she says, wear a mirror on your face, people are going to use it. So,
yeah. Really, he wiped himself off again, too.
Yeah.
I just think that's funny.
It keeps it shiny, right?
Yeah, I guess. Sunflower seeds will do that. They will stick in your gums like that. Well, so. Not,
but also, like, maybe it has to be kind of permeable for him to be able to see and breathe through it, right? So maybe, like, his sweat does kind of come through, maybe.
Yeah.
I guess.
Maybe.
No. Right? Is her eating sunflower seeds, is that a reference to the X-Files? And Agent Mulder always ate sunflower seeds.
Maybe.
So.
Well, so do I. I mean, I don't know. It could have been a reference to me.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I had him today, so.
I just, that's what I immediately thought of, because he's an FBI agent, and Jack, so far I haven't figured it out.
You don't know.
I think that's pretty safe to say.
I'm pretty good at keeping secrets, so sure. You don't know.
There you are. But I think she realizes something's kind of foul at play. She notices the wheelchair marks left behind by Will.
Right.
And you know, she asks about Angela, which, you know, Looking Glass kind of gives her up a little bit, but I think he knows that, you know, Lori knows what's going on. And
well, she's extremely smart.
Yes. And the funeral is happening that day. And, you know, with everybody there, we kind of have a Seventh Cavalry member like coming up to with a you know a bomb vest, and we saw that in yesterday's episode or last week's episode, that was a moment I just did not expect in the episode. That was pretty intense and action packed. Their use of the ticking clock is definitely anxiety inducing.
Is there any chance that Judd is not dead?
we saw because bits and pieces of him blow up today.
Well, you have Blake says she says that it seems awful quick to bury someone in a murder.
I think it was more because
you're 100%, and then you have Angela drags the coffin in to where the guy has been. She drags the guy in there and then puts the coffin inside it. I don't know. I know I'm probably wrong, but it just seems odd.
I don't think he's alive. I just think they were trying to quickly move this along because, you know, he wouldn't have passed the toxicology report. The toxicology report would show
cocaine,
cocaine, whatever. Maybe there's probably some other drugs there they probably didn't want to have found out.
But isn't it all legal in Robert Redford's world?
We don't know. We don't know.
Okay. All right. Or Robbie Redford.
Just because he's Democrat doesn't mean he's going to legalize all the drugs.
No, I thought that it was. I thought there was more freedoms there, so I just throw it out there. He's an actor, so.
So you're saying all actors are druggies? That seems kind of just painting with a broad brush there, Jack.
Well, I'm just thinking of Studio 54. I'm sorry. I apologize.
I wasn't quite sure exactly where they were breaking into the 7th Cavalry as the eulogy was, you know, I was like, oh, are they? And I was like, no, that doesn't make sense that they would break into a bank while this is going on. Are they like, and so, you know, I'm kind of like putting those pieces together as it's happening live.
That I knew. I knew what was going on there.
Yeah. I was like, well, I think that it's a mausoleum. So it's probably there. Yeah. But it was kind of like a turn of events. And, Laurie kills him, and then the thing starts the countdown because he said it was connected to his heart. And then Angela kind of dumps him in Judd's grave and pushes the coffin over just in time to kind of save everybody.
With Judd allegedly in it.
The suspicious reasons are not because he's not there, I think, because the police force was obviously trying to kind of speed this along without doing a full investigation.
Because she said she was going to dig him up the next day.
Yeah. Yes, because she obviously suspects that it's not 7th Cavalry. And Angela knows it's not 7th Cavalry. But, you know, her one key piece of evidence or witness was abducted by a big magnet thing.
was he abducted or did he go willingly?
We assume only because he smiled as he was being taken away.
So he wasn't abducted.
He was reducted.
Reducted. He went by choice.
But kind of after that, as they're all investigating it, Lori takes Petey's coffee, which again,
have you drank that yet? Nope.
And I thought Lori's speech to Angela was a little hokey, you know, especially like I eat bad guys for breakfast or whatever that line was. Angela to type basically kind of, you know, says F you Lori, and dumps out the coffee and walks away. So I know that, you know, Lori's trying to get to the bottom of here, but I don't know if being tough. The tough guy here, a bad cop here, was the way to go.
She knows that there was something behind. She knew that the door, the hidden door, and she knew that Lori was there, and you're not the fainting type. I think what I liked about this scene, you have two strong women who are trying to outsmart each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it sets up for good TV the rest of the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, the dynamic of both of them, because on one hand, even as a Watchmen fan, you're like, oh, I like Lori, you know, like, and we've already seen how tough as nails she can be and darkly funny she can be in this episode. But we've also had those two episodes with Angela, so we know a little bit more about her, and we're kind of rooting for her as well. So I really liked that. And
yep.
I love that shot of Lori through the lens of the
right.
owl lenses there. The owl
that was cool.
Yeah. So a lot of really great cinematography moments that just kind of, you know, set up some really cool images. I wanted to mention before we move even further down the line with Lori's story here, is we did get to see Green's public address.
Keen.
Why did I say Green? Thanks for correcting me on that. Anyway, his public address, though, he mentions the Russians' field generators. So I'm just kind of curious as to, you know, is this some kind of backstory throwaway thing, or is this going to come play out like later in the season, and what these Russian field generators are? So I thought that was kind of a like makes you pause. So
Well, right, because yeah, the Russians were the big threats. You know, nuclear holocaust was the big threat in the original Watchmen series, and until Ozymandias's kind of horrible plan, which did work, kind of put a stop to that. But it's interesting to see those tensions are kind of building up again, for sure.
And he was, you know, basically saying like, look, you know, my focus is the people here, not Russia. So,
yep.
Yeah.
But again, I think it's a good cop because it's a little bit of something that probably is a thread that if we keep pulling is going to become a bigger storyline down the road. For sure. What else is there? I'm trying to make sure I cover everything with Lori's story. I know we have the Dr. Manhattan dildo, which I thought was interesting. I didn't know that. I mean, is that you know, custom made for her, or can you buy that at a shop? I don't know.
I'm thinking that that's a buy at a shop kind of thing. You know,
did she use it on Pete? That's what I'm wondering about.
No, clearly she was looking at that and she was like, you know, this is kind of cold and I've been using it a lot, and you know, it's just, it's not quite like Dr. Manhattan because she's clearly had that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she settles for little Petey.
Little Petey.
little Petey.
Who wears the mask?
He does wear the mask.
Because yeah. Probably like part of their, you know, play or whatever. I don't know. Like,
yeah, works.
She said, yeah, wear the mask, Petey. Wear the mask.
Go ahead, little Petey, put on your mask.
Yeah.
Maybe she didn't want to know. Maybe she was pretending it wasn't Petey. So put on the mask so I don't have to see you.
And then kind of is that the car that dropped, is that the one that Will was in?
No, it was a van.
No, that's the car.
Right?
I thought Will was in a van.
No, he wasn't in a van. He was in a car.
Yeah. It was like sure? Okay. It was like one of those fake SUV cars.
Okay.
Of course, if I'm wrong about this, you know, just let me know, like calling Keen Green. So
if I'm right, just, you know, let me know.
Can we just say, but also I do want to give Matt some props. You have had a couple big things turn out to be right that you have mentioned. So I just want to, you know, give you a moment to shine here and say, good job, Matt.
Hey, okay. You had a couple good first weeks this week. Not so good, but you know, it's okay.
I say you've been doing a great job. You've been the all-star of this podcast, which isn't saying much, but I think you have been the all-star of the podcast.
I'm glad that I'm earning my keep. So I don't have any firsthand knowledge about that dildo, but
that's where you need warm taffy.
Yeah, sure. but I know where you're kind of headed, at least, Jay, with the fact that we kind of hear the kind of the payoff or the whole rest of the story, the joke that she's telling Dr. Manhattan in the blue booth, which I just love how that played out like throughout this episode.
Yes, I absolutely loved it.
The words that she uses to basically say, like, you know, she went through each one of the heroes. The owl, he didn't kill anybody. He goes to hell. The smartest guy kills, you know, 3 million people, goes to hell. Dr. Manhattan is basically a god. And he knows he's going to hell because he can see the future. And then she mentions herself, you know, which is just so good.
Which is the one that, you know, God didn't remember who she was. As well as, you know, and that's the one that kind of gets you, right? And so I do love that angle about at least maybe how she sees herself, possibly. And then, yeah, this little nod with this car getting dropped back down. And, we're pretty sure it's the one that Will got taken away in. So does that confirm that Will is in cahoots with Dr. Manhattan?
Well,
if that's his car, yeah.
Because at first I was like, oh, maybe it's just dropping and it's random and it's coincidence. But then we kind of see that Mars, you know, kind of somehow flare up that she sees it or something.
Right.
So that definitely feels like a wink and a nod from Dr. Manhattan. So Will would have to be connected to this whole thing, to Dr. Manhattan, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
I would say so.
Which would mean Dr. Manhattan cares about society, which again kind of seems interesting. So there's a lot to unpack there that we're just going to have to probably wait and see, but it is fascinating.
And could it okay, and I'm just saying, like, maybe she wants so bad to have Dr. Manhattan just to recognize her, just to say, I'm thinking about you. So when this moment happens, of course, she's like, oh, he really does like me.
He couldn't have dropped flowers.
Well, I think he gave her a clue, right?
Would have been a little safer. She seemed startled, which shocked me.
Well, yeah, it was a big car that just got dropped in front of her.
But she's so cold. I just thought, you know, and cool. I thought that it wouldn't faze her.
Anyway. All right. Anything else from this episode, gentlemen, before we talk?
We didn't even get into Ozymandias.
Oh my God. I like jumped past that. Yes. Ozymandias. Let's dive into it.
So the Ozymandias story kind of comes right after, I believe, the eulogy and the funeral, right. and all of the action packed, of that. We get to hear this cool reggae song from 68 or 69, I'm going to totally murder that song.
Don't even worry about it.
Okay, anyway, it's a really cool song, though, and we see Ozymandias building a suit. Mm-hmm. We see him drawing, we see him painting, like, some
fabric.
What's that?
Like, furiously, like, just kind of like,
yeah.
Like a madman, kind of.
Yeah, and, you know...
Well, he is a madman, isn't he?
Yeah, I guess so.
From a certain point of view.
Yeah, I mean, and so, you know, I'm just like, oh, what is he making? And, you know, of course he makes the suit for Mr. Phillips to wear. which I think we all kind of expected this was not going to go well, right?
No.
Like,
no.
You see this guy just, like, about... they're definitely playing the mystery card there, because the whole time I'm like, oh, what's going to happen? Is he going up? Is he going down? Where is he going?
Well, when they showed the little catapult thing or the trebuchet, whatever it is, I was like, oh, maybe he's just going to like sling him into space, right?
Right.
But so that kind of – does that confirm that he's on a different planet possibly?
Or time travel?
A different dimension?
Different dimension.
I mean, the idea that Dr. Manhattan may have actually like imprisoned him, yeah. You know, and set him in a place and is actually playing a game with him, you know. I don't know. I mean, he can't be on Earth. Like,
no, I don't think so.
I mean. We see in this scene where he's riding on the horse later, it almost like looks like, you know, the moors in England or something like that. Like it's a very English countryside.
Shot in Wales.
Okay, shot in Wales. There, yeah. And yet there's bison there, which they don't have bison there. Like
it definitely just feels like it's a construct made to kind of contain him, which, you know, we did see. Well, we saw two people kind of building that castle that he's in, and Dr. Manhattan was one of them. So it would seem like maybe Dr. Manhattan built this prison for him. And when he does go to try and make a new suit with thicker hide, and he kills a bison with his bow and arrow, somebody shoots at him, and this is a game warden that basically kind of gives him a slap on the wrist saying, hey, it looks like you're trying to get out. That's what you're supposed to be doing. And then he kind of closes it out by when he kind of has one of his servants write this, you know, very sternly worded letter, and he's going to go hunt at midnight, but then he dons his Ozymandias suit, which I did not expect to see happen. So, you know, maybe he's just going to go kill the warden, and that's going to, like, let him be free to do whatever he wants. But it'll be interesting.
And the game warden was wearing some type of mask as well. I thought it was an interesting call out too. I mean, we've heard about Laurie mentioned the Lone Ranger. So mm-hmm. I thought it was kind of an interesting kind of call out where it kind of reminded me of the Lone Ranger in some way. I think his assistant, he calls her Mrs. Crookshank or Miss Crookshank.
Miss Crookshanks.
Miss Crookshanks, yeah. So
at least she doesn't die.
Not yet.
Yeah. So. Not yet. Give it time.
And the game warden is actually riding a black horse, by the way, where he has the white horse that he is named, what was it, Bucephalus or whatever. I looked it up. It's basically the horse that Alexander the Great had, Ozymandias is a huge Alexander the Great admirer, so it'll
Who
make
is
sense.
You know? He's an impressive dude.
So, anyway, interesting to seeing the game going afoot there. I also closed in on just that single image of Mr. Phillips laying there, because there's a shot where you see some of his body, you know, after he kicks it, you know, you kind of see like, it's like, it looks like bone, but it also doesn't look like real bone.
Well, I thought he was like frozen. Like he had ice on him.
He is frozen, but when he kicks him there, like at one point you get to see kind of like his shoulder area is like broken free, and it does not look like a normal shoulder bone.
Is it a robot?
Totally. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out like what is this guy, you know? Like it clearly is flesh and bone, but that doesn't look like a normal body. Like a normal anatomical bone structure. And I just, for a show that's so focused on some of these details, I thought that was an interesting detail to give us about the body. So make of that what you will.
Oh, man. All right. Well, a lot to unpack in this episode, and I feel like we've unpacked it as best we can right after the episode airs. And now it's time to get into what you all thought. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick ad break.
Listener feedback.
All right, it's listener feedback time. We have a couple emails and a phone call to get into, so let's start off with the emails. This first one is from David Gott, whoever that guy is.
David Gott.
Matt, Jay, and Jack, I enjoy the first episode of the new podcast. Thanks for doing it. I'm a huge fan of the Watchmen source material, so I've been waiting for the show, particularly as Damon is a huge fan himself and gets it. A couple things to consider. Regina King's character tells the school children she was born in Vietnam. The Vietnam conflict was a huge part of the source material. Is it possible she is somehow related to the events there? Perhaps descendant of the comedian's illegitimate children. Then were child of the women who cut the comedian in the original story and was then shot somehow live? 2. Did anyone notice that King's children were not the same race as her in some cases? I guess this might be before last episode, so that one might have been answered. The show has so many racial overtones. This must mean something. Perhaps worship the Judd. But no, we got that answered. 3, Little Bighorn was code for extermination of the 7th Cavalry, in my opinion. So the message was, they are back, let's destroy them. The question remains, was this an official police action or Judd and Sister Knight acting for a different reason? 4, why did Judd have access to Archie? Was it Archie or do the police just use his tech now? Who was the masked woman piloting the ship? Does it matter? Great show, sincerely, got a good Dave, sent from my iPad. Thanks, Scott. Some good stuff there. Some of the stuff was answered already, but I think, yeah, the Archie question and why they had it is one that remains to be seen. But I do like Matt's theory that he kind of posed in this episode, that maybe he was working with them at some point, or when they apprehended him or something, or imprisoned him, they stole it. But I do think there's a connection there for sure.
And the woman piloting it, I think that was Pirate Jenny.
It was Pirate Jenny.
Okay. So sure. she made an appearance in this episode. I love, like, yes, the scene with her and Red Scare, where basically Laura's just like, she just doesn't give a crap about those two. I love that.
Oh man.
So
all right,
David.
We have an email from Ethan.
Okay.
Hello. Jack hit my vanity button, so here I am. I try to take notes, but this show is so dense that half were answered in the course of the show, and then 28 more questions piled up. I picked one thing to talk about. Warning, leftover references abound. The Keen / 7th K connection seems so obvious that I have to second guess it based on the fact that it's a Damon Lindelof show. It seems a perfect fit for a comic book, but all signs point to it, and not in a subtle way. Kevinism, anyone? The only thing I know about this show is that I have no idea what's coming next, and I'm absolutely loving it. Okay, I tried. Thanks so much for doing a podcast of the show. The Lindelof experience just wouldn't be the same without Jay and Jack, and Mike Bloom's obviously better-looking replacement. Hi, Matt.
Wow. High praise. Thank you.
Lego, so Ethan has a problem with his vision.
Lego host airport stalker Ethan. P.S. If Jay could use a Kermit voice to describe what's in Lori's suitcase, that would be great. Maybe a gutter cleaner with unique biometrics.
That would have been a good name, gutter cleaner. That would have been a good one.
Gutter cleaner, there you go, yeah.
Yeah.
Ethan, always great getting an email from you. Also, I met Ethan in real life, IRL, at an airport in Nashville, I think. So anyways, thank you, Ethan, for the email. Let's see. And we've got a phone call. Let me play that right now. Or in 5 seconds. Whenever this thing decides to play. Here we go.
Hello, Jack and young whippersnappers. This is Jared from Missouri, calling to give my theory of the week. I think that the young senator is a fraud. We know that he's trying to run for president against, I think they called him Robbie Redford, which I got a kick out of him calling Robbie. I think that the 14th Cavalry, if that's their name, I think it is, the 14th, well, whatever the cavalry number is, I think that they are a sham. I don't believe they actually even hold an ideology. I think that they're just a puppet for a politician to prop him up so that he can use them as a reason for becoming the president of the United States. I hope I'm explaining this right. Just go through it one more time very, very quickly. I don't think the Cavalry is actually a hate group of any kind, or that they've actually been inspired by Rorschach. I think that they are just a puppet for a politician create buzz for him so that when he is able to take them down, that he's able to prop himself up. Hope it made some sense. Guys, looking forward to the show, and we'll talk to y'all later. Bye.
Thank you for the call. I think it's a really good theory. I don't necessarily it'd be tough, I think, for them to like be willing to die for the cause, so I do think maybe they're just maybe pawns in this situation. But
maybe they don't know.
Really
maybe they don't
theory.
Know they're gonna die, right?
Well, that, or yeah, just they do believe in it, whatever they are doing, but the mastermind behind it doesn't actually care. It is just for political means, and something, some kind of twist like that would fit into the Watchmen lore because it happened a few times.
Maybe that's why they were going to take the senator, make it, you know, give him like some publicity, you know, get escapes or whatever happens.
Well, exactly. Yeah, if he's like a puppet master,
he was very willing to go with them, and
he didn't even hesitate.
if he masterminded this, he may have been like, okay, like, I'm going to go with them and then I'll be a hero, or, you know.
And then Laurie screwed the whole thing up by killing the guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. No, that's a good idea there. I mean, wouldn't be surprised if we don't see by episode, you know, 5 or 7 where, you know, all of a sudden, like, Keen pulls down a Rorschach mask or something like that, or he lifts off a Rorschach mask and then it's Keen. So, but he's definitely benefited by, and we learned in this episode where he's the one that's implemented this use of the police, and this whole DORPA. we also haven't, we didn't get a chance to mention this in you know, just kind of our breakdown of the episode, but we saw the Millennium Clock. Mm-hmm. As well as we got our first reference to Lady True, who bought Adrian Veidt's company. So, and based on the trailer for next week, it looks like we will actually get to see her, meet her, and find out maybe who and what her agenda is. So I'd be interested to see how she plays into this whole, you know, I mean, I would think of her being kind of above this whole 7th Cavalry KKK thing, because right now it seems to be mainly white men that wear flannels. So, but yeah, great thoughts there, and thanks for the call.
Yes,
thank you. Really, good theory, definitely. Especially, yeah, he was very willing to go with that 7th Cavalry member.
Because there wasn't any hesitation. Usually it's like, well, you know, okay, I'll go.
All right.
And there's plenty of police there. I mean, to stand in front of him or to bodyguard him. I did love the call out there, too, where Laurie figured out how, like, because her dad had a hidden secret closet, that's how she figured out that Judd had one, too. I thought that was a really nice connection back to the comic. So anyway, sorry, random thoughts about this episode. It was such a fun episode, and you know, like I said, I felt like it really percolated and built off of everything that we'd, you know, built up on those first two, and set up some great dynamics. And what an interesting thing that the other was that the email about maybe from David Gott about you know, possibly Angela being a illegitimate child of the comedian, and how that might set up an interesting dynamic even between Angela and Lori, also being both, you know, daughters of the comedian, you know. So something that could create
and they end up working together.
Well, it'd be an interesting, like, way of drawing them in together if they're working against each other. But then by the 9th or 10th episode, all of a sudden, this is a buddy cop show.
I don't see them being buddies.
Well, I mean, I didn't see that happening when I watched L.A. Confidential. But by the end, I was like, this is a buddy cop movie.
Dude, spoiler alert.
Or, you know, even Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy didn't get along at first. But, you know, eventually they did, so...
That's true. They did respect each other in the end.
Anyway,
he was a Beverly Hills cop too. So, sorry, I'm diverting.
And he wasn't liked there either. So
yeah, again, that's the trope, right? At the beginning, you're like, I don't like the way you operate, but and then by the end, it's like, we're friends. Anyway,
yeah, I don't drink your coffee.
Anyway, all right. Well, that is it for this week's episode of Watchmen with Jay, Jack, and Matt. Give us a call at 385-309-0311.
Calling time.
Also, send an email to watchmenjjm@gmail.com. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/JandJackGroup. Use our Amazon link at jandjack.com/Amazon. It'll be the same Amazon you know and love, but a small percentage of those sales do go to the Jay and Jack production fold. And speaking of supporting this network, become a patron today. Whether you give $1 or more a month, it all helps make these shows possible. I want to especially thank Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Richter, Maggie the Magnificent, Joanne with the Plan, Drake the Destroyer, and Ed the Creepy Mailman. Thank you to all of our patrons. You can find a full list over at jayandjack.com. Gentlemen, thank you again for a fun podcast. Look forward to what comes next week and talking about it with you right after. Until then, hasta luego and goodbye.
Bye.
Great show, guys. One in a blue booth.